Deutsche Welle, Africa Link.
Hello and welcome to Africa Link. I'm Crispin Mwakideo.
And I am Zipora Nyambura. We are live on radio and Facebook audio. Thank you for joining us.
And coming up, Liberia's Supreme Court indefinitely postpones the presidential runoff over voter fraud allegations.
People, I am afraid that if this election doesn't go on the runoff between the two top parties, that it might run into the January 16 inauguration date.
And Zimbabwe's President Robert Mugabe sacks his deputy Emmerson Mnangagwa. His first lady, Grace Mugabe, set to replace him.
It will be a mockery to the intelligence of Zimbabweans to have Grace Mugabe as the vice president of this country, let alone the president of this country.
Also in the program, COP23 International Conference on Climate kicks off here in Bonn. Stay tuned for the story. But as always, let's first catch up with what's been making headlines across the world.
I'm Sertan Sanderson with DW News. Representatives from 197 countries have started gathering in Bonn, Germany, for the annual UN Climate Change Conference. 23,000 delegates, including politicians, scientists, and activists, are expected at the 23rd Conference of the Parties, or COP23, until November 17. French President Emmanuel Macron and German Chancellor Angela Merkel are among those who have confirmed their attendance. Frank Bainimarama, Prime Minister of Fiji, the country which presently holds the COP presidency, opened the event, saying it was an honour to prepare the way for more ambitious climate action.
From one of the most climate vulnerable regions on Earth, I bring you the greetings of the Fijian people and all the Pacific Islanders, and our collective plea for the world to maintain the course we set in Paris.
The conference will be the largest international event of its kind ever to take place in Germany. Some 400 separate events are planned. A major data leak dubbed the Paradise Papers has revealed evidence of tax avoidance among high-ranking politicians around the globe. Some in US President Donald Trump's cabinet have been implicated in the data dump. U.S. Commerce Secretary Wilbur Ross was alleged in the Paradise Papers to have links with some of Russian President Vladimir Putin's closest allies. The leaked data was obtained by German newspaper Süddeutsche Zeitung, which said that the majority of the documents stemmed from the offshore law firm Appleby, which was founded in Bermuda but has offices in several other locations. You're listening to DW News. A former lawmaker filed a petition at Kenya's Supreme Court challenging the results of last month's repeat presidential election. According to Reuters, the petition filed by former legislator Harun Mwau seeks to overturn President Uhuru Kenyatta's victory in the October 26 election, which was held after the Supreme Court had nullified Kenyatta's win in an August 8 presidential election on procedural grounds. The grounds for Mwau's petition, however, were not immediately clear. A British national who had been held hostage in Nigeria has been killed. Three others have meanwhile returned home safely. The four who were working with a Christian medical charity in southern Nigeria's Delta State had been kidnapped last month. A number of high-profile abductions have been carried out by militants in the Delta region in recent years. Zimbabwean President Robert Mugabe has fired his vice president, Emmerson Mnangagwa, in a major government shakeup. Mnangagwa, a 75-year-old former intelligence chief, had recently fallen out with Mugabe, who has been accusing him of fanning factionalism to garner support ahead of a special ZANU-PF party congress in December. Both Mnangagwa and Robert Mugabe's wife Grace were widely seen as potential successors to the 93-year-old leader, who has been in office since 1987. Despite his advanced age, Mugabe has refused to name a successor and has been endorsed as his party's candidate for the next election. And for more news and information, please log on to dw.com.
You're listening to DW's Africa Link. I'm Crispin Mwakideo.
And I am Zipora Nyambura. Remember, we are live on Facebook on our page DW Africa, so do leave us your comment. We shall read it later in the program.
And we kick off the show in Liberia, where the country's Supreme Court has indefinitely postponed the presidential runoff. This means the election scheduled for Tuesday, November the 7th, will not go ahead as planned. Following a legal challenge by opposition party Liberty, the court ruled that all voter fraud allegations must be fully investigated before the country picks its next leader. Former football star George Weah and Vice President Joseph Boakai are the two candidates left in the race for the top job. DW's Evelyn Pade has been telling me the reactions in Monrovia following the ruling.
Prior to the court's ruling, there were dozens of Liberians who gathered here on the grounds of the Temple of Justice that housed the Supreme Court to hear what was actually going to come out. I mean, the place was jam-packed with the presence of state security everywhere. So across the country, there are people on one group that are happy about the court's ruling, and the other group on the other side who feel worried that if this election doesn't go on, they fear the issue of an interim government.
Is there any indication of how long Liberia will have to wait before the runoff?
In the court's ruling, which I have before me here, the court is asking the National Elections Commission to halt the process until the case is investigated, complaints the Liberty Party has filed, but it is not clear how long that investigation will last. But the law says, the election law says, after these kind of complaints at the Supreme Court and ruling, the Elections Commission is given 7 days to go into the matter.
Now, Evelyn, Kenya is still reeling from a court ruling that nullified the August 8th election there. How concerned are Liberians that this ruling, which happened today on Monday, could push the country into uncharted waters, into uncharted territory?
People, I am afraid that if this election doesn't go on the runoff between the two top parties, and if there is a possibility that the entire October 10 election would need to be done all over, people are afraid that it might run into the January 16 inauguration date, because the Constitution puts January as the date for a new government to take power. So if this delays and there should be another rerun of the election process, then the country might be heading to an interim government, because constitutionally, the tenure of this government of President Sirleaf comes to an end January 2018.
DW correspondent Evelyn Pade in Monrovia, and we do apologize for the background noise in that telephone interview.
And of course, thank you to those who are listening to us live on our Facebook page, DW Africa. There's one Rashid Naz who says he is from Pakistan and is listening about climate conference. And yes, I will go ahead and give you the news about that. The 23rd UN Global Climate Conference kicked off today in Bonn, Germany, bringing together a total of 196 countries. The conference aims to come up with details on how to implement the landmark 2015 Paris Agreement. Africa is bearing the brunt of climate change, with drought and floods threatening livelihoods and killing thousands. According to the UN, temperatures in most African countries will rise in the next years, threatening not just people, but the coastal and marine life. I talked to my colleague Ineke Mills, who is covering the event. And first, I wanted to find out why this conference is important for Africa.
Well, this conference, it's extremely important for African nations. Of course, this year it is being held in Bonn, Germany, but the president is Fiji. And so, of course, a lot of the focus, outwardly at least, is on these island nations and the sort of consequences they will face from climate change. But there is a significant African presence there as well. And a lot of what's going to be happening this year is going to be following on from the Africa Carbon Forum, which was held in Benin earlier this year, which was more or less saying what African nations need to do is figure out a better way to cooperate with one another, to decide what the goals are between them. Because, of course, African nations are very different from a lot of other more industrialized countries in terms of what they can and can't put into policy. Everyone's starting from a different level, basically. They need to show that they can cooperate not only as a continent, but with the rest of the world, and what role they can play there is very important as well.
For many people in Africa, climate change is like something too far away. It will happen, but it has not happened. What do you think African nations, or rather this conference, hopes to tackle such an issue which is threatening African lives?
Well, you're right in the sense that's one of the big problems of climate change in general, is the fact that it's not an immediate crisis necessarily, especially in a lot of African countries where they are dealing with far more immediate crises. I think what they want to point out most of all is the fact that, you know, livelihoods are tied to climate change. You mentioned droughts and famine. You've got more than two-thirds of people in Africa who make their living off of the land itself.
When you talk about climate change, we can't stop, rather, we cannot avoid talking about Donald Trump, because the US pulled out of climate change this year. Do you think this conference will tackle the problem of poor nations not having enough funds to tackle climate change?
It's a contentious issue when people say, because of course, a lot of these poorer nations are going to be affected the most, but they're not the ones who put these emissions out necessarily. They are very low emitters. As for the US, the delegation is a lot smaller this year, unsurprisingly, following President Trump's decision. But there is a very high US presence in other areas like business and NGOs.
DW correspondent Ina Camille's updating us on the UN Climate Change Conference here in Bonn.
And of course, we'll have more on that in the coming days. Now back to Africa, and we are in Zimbabwe. Embattled Vice President Emmerson Mnangagwa has been sacked. News of his removal as President Robert Mugabe's deputy was delivered by Information Minister Simon Kaya Moyo. Mnangagwa's departure has much to do with First Lady Grace Mugabe, who accused the one-time ally and independent struggle comrade of Mugabe of dividing the ruling ZANU-PF. As Privilege Mushaniri reports from Harare, critics say Mugabe's succession battle and Grace's hunger for power is not good for the country.
On Monday, First Lady Grace Mugabe finally managed to have Vice President Emmerson Mnangagwa, Mugabe's long-time ally, to be sacked. He is accused of dividing the ruling ZANU-PF party and harboring ambitions to succeed Mugabe. Grace is now pushing for the party's constitution to be amended at an extraordinary congress planned for December to allow a clause that reserves the post for a woman. She has not hidden her dislike for Mugabe's deputy.
If all people do not want disciplinary action to be taken against Mnangagwa, I am going to stand alone. If you see yourself going against the chosen leadership, you are gone and finished.
You are finished! You are gone!
However, ordinary Zimbabweans are worried about the escalating succession fights within Zimbabwe's ruling party.
A blessing and a curse. A curse in that the focus is no longer on economic issues or stabilizing whatever is going on. The people are suffering. The whole dynastic or whatever, the dynasty ideology or whatever program Mugabe is, we no longer want that. We want something new, a change.
We were hoping to see people in government more united, people in the ruling party more united than before. So when the First Lady comes into power, what is most likely, we should brace for more chaos, and I don't think this is good for our economy.
Critics say Grace's hunger for power and lavish spending is harmful for Zimbabwe. Linda Masarira, a civic rights activist, fears the West.
It will be a mockery to the intelligence of Zimbabweans to have Grace Mugabe as the vice president of this country, let alone the president of this country. If you've got a person who's just the wife of the president claiming ownership of a national asset, what would happen if she takes over the reins of power? She's shown us in the very little space that she had, the very little power that she's got, that she's power hungry and that she just wants to amass all the wealth she can get.
And that report was compiled by Privilege Mushaniri in Harare.
Now, we asked you, what will become of Zimbabwe if President Mugabe was to select his wife as the country's next president? Many of you have been sending in your reactions on our Facebook page. I will start with the first one from Kenneth Eno, who says, I think by doing so, he will be biting more than he can chew.
And Demeria Louis says, our hope is the name of the Lord who makes heaven and earth. He's being very, very religious.
Yeah. And Okogwen Adohemba says, it's pathetic to see this kind of thing happening in the 21st century, a leader handling a country as his family affairs. I'm disappointed in most of the African leaders.
Sikosile Nkosi from South Africa writes, well, South Africa is just about doing it. Where a sitting president anointed his former wife, that is Nkosazana Dlamini Zuma, with whom they have kids to succeed him. We live in an abnormal country where stealing is a collective condition by institutions and government, as well as deadwood ministers.
And John Iyer wraps up and says, Mugabe is a brutal dictator who should be arrested and jailed.
John Iyer says, Sheikh Galak Kisito, he says, he's the king of African dictators. Well, let's leave the comments at that. Keep them coming on our Africa page, DW, and we'll read them as we have time. You're listening to Africa Link with me, Crispin Mwakideu.
And I am Zipporah Nyambura. In the next 15 minutes, Cameroonians divided over President Paul Biya's 35 years in office.
The killings, the maiming, massive arrests and abductions at the instigation of the Biya junta have been unprecedented in the history of our nation.
And we find out why more and more pregnant Ugandan women are choosing to deliver under the knife. Those stories, plus, of course, our weekend sports roundup with Samson Omale coming up shortly. But first, let's head to Cameroon. This November the 6th, 2017, makes it exactly 35 years that Paul Biya has been in power in Cameroon. He's one of the longest-serving presidents in the world. As the anniversary of his rise to power is observed, there have been calls for him not to stand for presidential elections next year. But his close collaborators and party supporters say he is the best choice. Moki Kinzeka reports from Yaoundé.
It is early in the morning and hundreds of youths have assembled at Nkobison Market Square. It's a neighborhood located in the capital Yaoundé. Kennedy Fonsa, president of the Union of Commercial Motorcycle Riders, says traditionally, when President Paul Biya's ruling CPDM party has a political event, he is tasked with bringing as many supporters as possible.
They give T-shirts, 1,000 tuta to buy. They give them money, they give them drinks. This sachet whiskey they give to them for them to feel like they are the CPDM, paying them transport and...
That is how thousands of people were this Monday transported to the various CPDM party houses and ceremonial grounds to celebrate the 35th anniversary of Biya's rise to power. Besides the singing and dancing, messages hailing Biya as the savior of Cameroon fill the airwaves, particularly stations that are run by the state. Among speakers at Monatele, another venue for the celebration of Biya's 35-year-old rule, is Joachim Tabi Owono. He is a former presidential aspirant who now supports Biya.
President Paul Biya has only received the mandate of the people.
President Paul Biya has got the mandate of the people. Now some people are saying that President Paul Biya should give independence to some people. Did President Paul Biya colonize this country? Did he colonize parts of Cameroon? Why then are people asking him to grant independence and freedom? When President Paul Biya wins elections, losers should shut up and support him. He should at least be respected because he has the mandate of the people. And elections are coming up next year.
But not all in Cameroon are proud of the president's record. The Social Democratic Front, Cameroon's main opposition political party, has been calling on Biya not to seek re-election in next year. Dennis Kemlemo is the SDF party spokesperson. He criticizes the regime's crackdown in Cameroon's English-speaking regions.
The killings, the maiming, massive arrests and abductions at the instigation of the Biya junta have been unprecedented in the history of our nation. This is evidence of a weak and dying regime at the verge of collapse that has resolved to annihilate the lives of the citizens.
Biya has ruled Cameroon since November 1982 and is the oldest sub-Saharan African president after Robert Mugabe. In 2008, he revised the 1996 constitution to remove presidential term limits, allowing him to contest and win the 2011 election.
Moki Kinzeka in Yaoundé.
And we are keeping tabs of your comments and reactions on our Facebook page, DW Africa. Osinachi Sunday is listening from Nigeria, and we have Kat Loven, who is saying, if truly the world united nation is fair to the globe and the world leading political powers do really want peace in their comfort zone, it's time to allow Africa to be independent, allow Biafra to be free from Nigeria, southern Cameroon, and it's time to do the right thing. That wraps it up, so keep those comments coming.
Health check.
Cesarean deliveries have become too common in Uganda that the increasing number of women opting for the operations is worrying gynecologists. Doctors say many are going for the C-section even on non-medical grounds, regardless of the risks it poses. In some cases, doctors are accused of being too quick to recommend the cesarean deliveries due to the profit they bring. But health experts are now warning women of the dangers of unnecessary surgeries, which has led to unnecessary deaths. As our DW correspondent in Uganda, Frank Higa, found out, there is more to this new craze, including the fear of losing the shape of their genitals during normal birth.
Oluka Jamila is a mother of one. She gave birth naturally, but the labor pains she went through are still fresh in her mind. Oluka tells me her antenatal checkups did not prepare her for the pain she was to face.
Most ladies now opt for C-section for those reasons. You find that you go through labor pains, at the end of it all, they will cut you.
And there are many like her. Betty Arach, a mother of two, first gave birth normally before getting a cesarean for her second child. During labor, her membrane failed to rupture and her body did not respond to the induction. She says her physician had no option but to perform an operation.
I do not know why the induction failed. The baby was supposed to come out. I would have given birth normally, but I don't know what happened.
I met Sarah Nalule on her way to the antenatal visits. She is a few days away from delivery, but like many Ugandan women, Nalule has made up her mind.
I want to go for cesarean and my baby will be out in no minute and I'll be fine. So I don't see why I should go screaming like a woman in the 1920s. I mean, it's .com. Science has improved life. Why should I have to go through the pain? No way.
In traditional Ugandan society, birth by cesarean section was unheard of. In case of complications while giving birth, midwives would use traditional herbs, which is today compared to induction. Many traditionalists, like Olivia Tweheyo, want to see the practice maintained.
In our culture, a woman is called a woman by the virtue that she has pushed a baby. That's the only thing that qualifies someone to be a woman. But if God said that the kids are supposed to go through the whole process and you get that pain, but here we are, a woman goes to the hospital, she's cut. So imagine a baby is in the stomach, sleeping, she is not yet prepared for what is in the world. Then all of a sudden, they're like, come out. It means those are the kind of the babies that we have now, who are jumping up and down. You know, you meet a kid does not know this is the mother, there is no bondage, nothing.
Myths about natural birth are due to lack of education, and hospitals continue to cash in on this craze for cesarean deliveries. But what about fears of a weak pelvic floor by women and the risks? Sewegamo Enoch, a doctor at Mlag Hospital, explains.
Women are opting for C-sections these days, and the reasons many of them give is because they think they might become wide when they deliver normally, so their husbands will run away to younger girls. With C-section, there are higher chances that a woman will bleed out. With C-section, there are higher chances that the woman might get complications of the drugs. There are drugs we administer. There are chances that they might pass on due to complications of those drugs.
Frank Iga reporting from Uganda.
Wow, a very, very interesting report there from Uganda about this cesarean section and why the women are opting to go for the surgery rather than go through normal delivery.
Yeah, I think it's funny and it's really sad that people need more education about it.
Exactly. But anyway, let's take a breather now from the health matters and politics and join our correspondent Samson Omale with a roundup on sports.
We begin with the New York City Marathon, where Kenyans once again dominated the race. Two-time World Half Marathon champion Jeffrey Kamawuru cruised to his maiden marathon victory, followed by compatriot Wilson Kipsang. Kamawuru broke away from a bunch of four rivals with 3 kilometers to go to win Sunday's marathon in 2 hours, 10 minutes, 53 seconds.
And I'm really delighted to have won a marathon. So for me, it's a fantastic moment. This was my sixth marathon. This was my first victory in marathon.
In the women's race, Charlene Flanagan became the first American woman to win the New York City Marathon in 40 years when she claimed a dominant victory over three-time Kenyan champion Mary Kitiani. Here is Charlene after clinching victory.
It's never over until you cross that finish line. About 9 months ago, I was heartbroken over not getting the opportunity to race the Boston Marathon, and it took me 7 years to do this. So it's a lot of work just went into this one moment.
And now to football news. Moroccan club Wydad Casablanca secured the first African Champions League title in 25 years as Walid El Karati's second half goal secured a 1-0 win over record 8-time winners Al Ahly of Egypt. Wydad won the tie 2-1 on aggregate to end their long wait for a second win in Africa's elite club competition, with victory coming in front of their Raucross home supporters who booed every touch of the ball from Ahly players. In the German Bundesliga, Bayern Munich moved 6 points clear of Borussia Dortmund after recording a 3-1 win over Dortmund at the Signal Iduna Park in Der Klassiker. Arjen Robben found the back of the net for the 93rd time in the Bundesliga to make him Bayern's record non-German goal scorer ahead of Giovanni Elba. Elsewhere, Hertha Berlin scored a late equalizer to salvage a 3-3 draw in a roller coaster Bundesliga game at Wolfsburg. Wolfsburg have now failed to win any of their past 8 home games in the Bundesliga, a club record. In basketball news, Nigeria's basketball senior men national team, the Tigers, made history on Sunday as they defeated Congo by 21-9 to win the first ever edition of the FIBA 3x3 African Cup, which took place in Lomé, Togo. In the women's event, Mali had a perfect 6-0 record in the competition, beating Nigeria in a 12-11 thriller, where Mali top scorer Jiniba Ndiaye had a game-high 5 points.
DW Sports correspondent Samson O'Malley. Now, Zipporah, let's go to Kenya.
Yeah,
again,
to hear.
Again, we have this petition that has been challenged. The election results have been challenged by Haron Mwau, a former legislator. So back, it seems like we are back again to the drawing board.
Yeah, but we have to wait until the Supreme Court makes its verdict. We don't know what they will decide this time.
All right. And meanwhile, the opposition coalition NASA has called for a boycott of products from companies that are affiliated in one way or another to President Uhuru Kenyatta's Jubilee Party. And so we did ask our Facebook followers and users, is it wise to target companies in order to settle political scores and grievances? Emperor Brian Nazer says Odinga needs good advisors. I think everybody needs good advisors, not only Odinga.
Yeah, you're right. Tabe Lovelin says, bad idea. This is just to further bring division in the country.
And then Aniekan Udonkang wrote, the way Odinga is going, he will soon fall.
Bhutan Sikaumbwe also says it's not wise to do that.
Abakoko Uvi says, in just 2 words, he wrote, bad loser. That Odinga is a bad loser.
Yeah, that sums it up. And thank you to all those who are listening to us on DW Africa on our Facebook Live. We have Chris Nuogu, who is talking about Liberia. He says we should not witness another crisis in Liberia. And Twist Sydney says there is no celebration in southern Cameroon, ghost town. So, and now we go to Congo. And the Democratic Republic of Congo's Electoral Commission is expected to release a long-awaited election timetable after President Joseph Kabila refused to step down when his final term expired last December. So, could he be using delaying tactics to hold on to power? That was the question.
Desmond Kwabena says, this is the thing I hate about some African leaders. Your time is up, and instead of you stepping down, you don't want to. Have you seen how stupid our leaders are? They are the real cause of this huge migration going on. They have made our continent unbearable for us to live in. Meanwhile, Africa is the most safest continent. God has blessed us with, and even the whites are aware of it. He goes on to talk about we have everything, but yet some leaders are more or less making life miserable for people.
Kenneth Eno says change is the only thing that is constant. He will leave because if he refuses to, power will leave him.
Sikoxile Nkosi says we need less and less of this type of leadership. He has not done anything for the people of DRC except military intimidations, encourage money laundering and corruption with the West, and run the country with patronage. We need less autocratic leaders. And there we come to the end of this edition of Africa Link. Thank you for your comments and listening. I'm Crispin Mwakideu.
And I'm Zipporah Nyambura. Bye for now.